Hi, welcome to episode 35 of On Jordan, a podcast on the latest developments in Jordanian politics, featuring interviews with experts on the Hashemite Kingdom. My name is Aaron Maggett, a former Amman-based journalist, now in Washington. Few countries in the Middle East have faced attacks by so many different states as Syria. Turkey has launched airstrikes on Kurdish targets in northern Syria. The United States has attacked pro-Iran militias in Deir Ezzor. Russian airstrikes have targeted Syrian rebels in Idlib province. Israel has struck Hezbollah fighters in Syria, and the Assad regime itself has bombed Syria numerous times. Adding to this long list is the Jordanian government. In December 2023, Reuters reported that Jordan launched airstrikes in southern Syria targeting drug smugglers affiliated with pro-Iran militias. Again on January 4, 2024, Jordan bombed the home of a drug dealer in the Syrian town of Shaab. Less than a week later, on January 8, Jordanian fighter jets struck hideouts of drug dealers in southern Syria. Jordanian Foreign Minister Ayman Safadi recently described the Syrian drug threat, saying,
"This is a very highly organized operation. Drug traffickers have access to very highly advanced technology. They're using drones. They've got night vision. So we're up against very, very serious challenge. We're protecting our border. Our military and our security agencies are on 24/7 alerts on the border."
To get a better understanding of the Jordanian campaign in Syria, it's great to welcome Charles Lister to the podcast. Charles is the director of the Syria and Counterterrorism Programs at the Middle East Institute in Washington. His book, The Syrian Jihad, Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, and the Evolution of Insurgency, was published by Oxford University Press in 2016. Thank you for joining us.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me.
So Jordan has been dealing with drug smuggling across its border with Syria for a few years now. Why in the past 2 months has Jordan launched at least four separate airstrikes inside Syria?
So it's a good question. So yes, it's certainly not a new problem. I think Jordan's approach to this challenge has taken on a number of different forms over time. In the early phase, it was public expressions of concern, quite significant kind of lobbying and outreach to the US government requesting various kinds of assistance, whether that be sanctions, military assistance, diplomatic statements surrounding the drugs trade emanating from Syria. It then shifted towards a policy of Jordan's normalizing of ties with the Syrian regime in an attempt to, I assume, try and convince it to put down the drugs trade emanating from its own Syrian territory. And now the latest installment of Jordan's approach is to unilaterally crack down on it itself. In a sense, I think that represents a conclusion in Jordan that previous efforts, whether it be through the US, through diplomacy, and through normalizing with Assad, none of that has worked. And so the only option left on the table now is to use the armed forces, essentially.
And have the Jordanian airstrikes in Syria been effective?
They haven't had too much of an effect yet. It will remain to be seen with time whether or not it has more of a strategic effect. The problem is the drugs trade in Syria is enormous. In terms of the production facilities, they are not just all along the Jordanian border. They reach all the way up to the Mediterranean coast in Latakia and Tartus, far beyond where Jordan will ever be able to reach or would be willing to reach. I think you could probably argue that the deterrent effect is perhaps more likely, at least in the short term. But there continue to be instances of clashes on the border, many of which go unreported by the Jordanian military, but certainly are things that the United States military is aware of, given our deployment in northern Jordan. And of course, the drug trade continues elsewhere in the region. Of course, this isn't just a Syria-Jordanian issue. And so the drug trade writ large is not going to stop, but we may see these ebbs and flows along the Jordanian border depending on some of these actions.
On January 18th, Reuters reported that a suspected Jordanian airstrike in Syria killed 10 people, including several women and children. What happened here?
Yeah, so that was, again, one of the series of strikes we've seen over the last few months. Well, this one targeted the home, actually, of a gentleman from Sweda who had played a very significant role in mobilizing popular anti-regime protests in Sweda over the last 6+ months. And it flattened his home and killed most of his family. Beyond that, we don't know anything else. Certainly, Jordan has offered no explanation as to the intended target. But as I say, and as you imply, it's come within this recent spate of Jordanian strikes that have targeted individuals, at least allegedly involved in the drugs trade. So one would assume that was the intended effect. But in this case, there does not seem to have been much linkage to the drug trade per se. And that, I think, raises some really troubling questions around where is the intelligence for these strikes coming from? And is there a chance that actually Jordan may be being manipulated from time to time in these in this issue? We don't have a lot of answers yet. There are quite significant reasons to believe that on an intelligence level, Jordan has begun to collaborate with a variety of different actors in southern Syria, covertly, of course, in order to collect intelligence on the drugs trade and presumably in part to feed some of these military actions. But given the extraordinary complexity of the situation in southern Syria, there is a strong likelihood that from on occasion, that kind of intelligence might actually be being fed to Jordan for other reasons. And this may very well be a prime example of exactly that, because this one doesn't seem to have involved anything to do with the drugs trade. And the local civilian population were livid. They described this as a massacre, having had both no evidence and no awareness of any kind of corrupt practices having been going on within that residence.
Is the smuggling from Syria into Jordan only drug smuggling or also smuggling of weapons?
Yeah, so it has involved some weapons so far as Jordanian reporting is concerned. Although on a relatively small scale, much of this smuggling, in fact, is being undertaken by armed men. And so it's hard to tell whether or not maybe some of those weapon seizures were related to simply individuals being armed as part of the smuggling action itself, or whether or not there is a weapon smuggling industry as well. Of course, anyone in Jordan and anyone familiar with Jordan will be well aware that the Syrian-Jordanian border has been used by smugglers for a very long time. That's not something that's new, and certainly not even something that began in 2011. You know, in fact, I had my own personal experiences taking taxi cabs from Damascus to Amman, and every single one of them ended up being used to smuggle cigarettes and all kinds of other goods across the border. So the smuggling industry is deeply entrenched. It just so happens that I think a lot of it has been taken over by drugs. I think another interesting thing here beyond weapons is that the fact that it's not just Captagon. Crystal meth appears to have become part of the drug trade crossing across the border. And that presents an additional problem from a security perspective, you know, not just given the danger of the drug, but, you know, crystal meth is much lighter and much more potent than Captagon. So it is easier to transport and have also a much more significant effect in terms of delivering the drugs themselves. And there have been incidences of crystal meth being transported by drones, small drones, commercially available drones, which are harder to detect from a security perspective, easier to use, more disposable. But again, the drug itself is that much more potent. So from a societal perspective, there are obviously significant causes for concern for Jordan itself.
And what are the weapons being smuggled into Jordan used for?
What are they used for? Well, that's a good question. I don't think we really know a great deal about that. The arms trade across the region, again, isn't necessarily something that's particularly new. Many people have their own personal weapons living in the region, and Jordan is no exception to that. The reality of having your own personally owned rifles and things at home is par for the course. So it could very well be that it's just tapping into that just general arms trade inside Jordan. There could be more malign purposes, of course, if you want to look at current events in Gaza and the Palestinian struggle. There could be, I suppose, a theory that weapons could be being smuggled into the West Bank from Jordanian territory via Syria. There's certainly an argument to be made in that respect, but I don't think we've got a great deal of evidence that would necessarily, you know, prove that that is something that has been in play in recent months, but certainly very feasible.
As you mentioned, Jordan has repeatedly urged the Assad government to fight the smuggling across its border. What has been the Syrian government's response?
Public expressions from the Syrian government that it has nothing to do with the drugs trade and that it has consistently done everything in its power to crack down on it domestically within Syria. But of course, anyone who knows anything about Syria and anyone who knows anything about the drug trade emanating from Syria knows that those statements don't really mean very much. I guess that was why many of us were puzzled and somewhat frustrated when Jordan justified, at least in part, its normalizing of ties with Syria as being part of an effort to put a stop to the drugs trade. The Syrian regime was never going to crack down seriously or meaningfully on the drugs trade in exchange for normalizing of ties. And now, of course, what we've seen in the last couple months or so is the Jordanian military coming out, I think, publicly and saying that at times intelligence has been shared with Damascus about what Jordan knows about the drugs trade. And in response to that, the regime has taken zero actions to crack down on known drug smugglers on Syrian territory. So I think that Jordan's more aggressive approach now is, as I said a minute ago, the conclusion, the result of the fact that Jordan no longer deems it a viable path in terms of collaborating with the Syrian regime to crack down on a drugs trade that is the Syrian regime. And we should make no mistake, you know, Jordanian intelligence, the GID, has on a number of occasions over the past couple years sent delegations to Washington, D.C. and other capitals to brief people like myself on the drugs trade emanating from Syria. And throughout all of those various meetings, some private and some public, they've made absolutely no secret of the fact that the Syrian regime is at the very heart of this drugs trade, and that Bashar al-Assad's brother, Maher al-Assad, who's arguably the second most powerful person in Syria, is the kingpin who basically runs the drug trade himself. So, of course, it's not a surprise to Jordan, to Amman, that the regime plays this role. But it was, as I say, somewhat sort of puzzling that the strategic approach for a substantial period of time was that the only way to break down the drugs trade was to work with the regime. And obviously that hasn't worked.
Last year, Jordan pushed to improve ties with the Syrian government, including the first visit by Foreign Minister Ayman Safi to Damascus since the 2011 war erupted, along with Jordan's support for the Assad regime to be readmitted into the Arab League. Why has Syria declined to return the favor to Jordan?
Frankly speaking, because the Syrian regime is an expert at taking and not necessarily giving a great deal back. And it knows that it can create problems and then at least offer to be the firefighter. So it can set fires and then offer to be the firefighter. But in most occasions, it doesn't actually ever put out the fire. It just turns the faucet a little bit up or a little bit down, depending on how much leverage it feels it needs to exert over other regional actors. And we've seen this play out in many different forms over the past 20 plus years in the region between Bashar's regime when he first came in 2000. And of course, you know, the most famous example of that was from the US-led occupation in Iraq, and it turned the faucet on those up and down depending on broader geopolitical considerations. But it also used that against Lebanon in the past, and it turned that faucet up and it turned it down depending on when it wanted to pressure different actors. And in many ways, drugs are the new jihadists for Damascus. This is their new tool to pressure both adversaries and rivals into taking more favorable positions. And of course, Jordan isn't alone here. The Saudis, I think, were driven by a very similar approach, whereby the drugs trade entering into Saudi was also considered a very significant national security challenge. And the judgment there also was that the best way to deal with that was to essentially deal with the regime and hope that with enough other promises of concessions down the line, the Syrian regime would prove more cooperative. But again, that obviously hasn't been the case.
And how involved are Iran and Hezbollah in the drug smuggling effort to cross Syria's border into Jordan?
So into Jordan specifically, they have a role. I would say Hezbollah more than Iran, but certainly Iran-linked actors. Elsewhere in the country, it frankly depends where you're looking. You know, Lebanon has also a number of established production facilities for Captagon specifically, as well as marijuana, hashish, and the movement of that across to the Jordanian border. And that is a trade, particularly across the Syria-Lebanon border, that Hezbollah exerts a significant influence and leverage over, let's say. And then as that travels south towards Jordan. But the Captagon production facilities that you see further north in Syria, in Aleppo and Homs in the Mediterranean coast, that is much less influenced by Iran or Iranian linked actors and much more by the Republican Guard, the 4th Mechanized Division. And that's obviously where you draw the Assad family or Assad clan into the mix. I would say, to cut a sort of long answer short, in the south, Iran-linked actors, and in particular Hezbollah, have more of a role. They don't drive it, but they have a role. They certainly take a cut, and they have a role in transportation. But they ultimately, they're operating on Syrian soil. And so that still places Syrian actors and Syria-focused actors as the prime.
Last question. The Pentagon announced on January 28th that three U.S. soldiers were killed from a drone attack in northern Jordan launched by Iran-backed fighters. Will the Hashemite Kingdom become like Syria and Iraq, where U.S. troops are frequently attacked by pro-Iran militias?
So that's a good question. I think it's probably unlikely that we'll see a significant repeat of what we saw on January the 28th. Of course, it's not the first time that that Tower 22 base was targeted, although I don't think it was actually ever publicized. But there was a very similar incident on October the 23rd when Tower 22 was targeted. And in that instance, the projectile overflew the target and landed even deeper inside Jordan, but in open territory. Placing all of the regional developments into some context, I think what we're seeing here is not just an effort by Iran and its various proxies around the region to obviously put pressure on Israel, but also to try to accomplish the degradation slash withdrawal or defeat of America in the Middle East. But they're doing that in a number of ways, not just by directly targeting the US, but also trying to insert tensions between the US and regional states. And I think what we saw very, very quickly after that attack on Tower 22 was the sort of revealing of some quite serious Jordanian insecurities around having to be dragged into this dynamic. You know, the Jordanian Ministry of Defense very swiftly came out and said the attack wasn't in Jordan, it was on Syrian territory, which obviously wasn't the case. It was on Jordanian territory. They subsequently corrected that. But the fact that that was the kind of gut instinct, you know, immediately reveals what I think probably Iran and its proxies wanted to reveal, which was that core US allies in the region, Jordan of whom is one, certainly one, both don't want to take a part in this messy regional chaos. They do not want to have anything to do with it. And second of all, they feel quite insecure around this situation. And of course, now Jordan has requested Patriot air defense systems from the US, and that places the US in a tricky position too, because there's a significant shortage of those systems, and we know our Gulf state partners also want them. So something's going to have to give. So I think that's that plus the situation in Yemen with the Houthis, where the Gulf states are really quite panicked and definitely don't want anything to do with this, and certainly don't want to see it spilling over into their borders, is all part and parcel of the bigger, wider Iranian strategy right now.
Well, thank you very much, Charles. I really appreciate your time.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That was Middle East Institute scholar Charles Lister. Here's what else happened in recent weeks. On February 1st, the Associated Press reported that the cell phones of a number of leading human rights activists and journalists in Jordan were hacked by the spyware firm NSO Group. Adam Kugel, a senior Human Rights Watch official who was one of the individuals impacted by the spyware, told AP it was difficult to imagine anyone besides the Jordanian government would be interested in hacking those targeted. In addition to Kugel, Hala Ahed, a defender of women's rights, and Hossam Haraiba, a well-known Jordanian journalist, were also hacked. The Jordanian government declined to comment on the report. In other news, on January 31st, Al Jazeera reported that Jordan approved its largest military budget in the kingdom's history. The country's military spending has now risen to around $2 billion. In December, the International Monetary Fund agreed to provide Jordan with a $1.2 billion loan as the Hashemite Kingdom faced ongoing economic challenges. Before I go, please listen to previous podcasts, including the Gaza War's impact on the Hashemite Kingdom with former Jordanian Minister Maran Juma, along with an episode on Jordan's Muslim Brotherhood with Professor Wagmakers. Also, please subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple, or Amazon. Finally, if you're interested in joining the podcast or have an idea for an episode, please reach out to me via Twitter at Aaron Magid or via email aaron.magid1@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.